Good morning. This is Leading Age DC, Leading Age Maryland, Leading Age Virginia. Today, we have Bill Vaughn and Jennifer Hardesty from Remedy Senior Care, and they are going to talk about drug diversion insights from the revised guidance to surveyors. Good morning, Bill and Jennifer. Take it away.
Good morning, Deborah. Good morning, everyone. Thank you all, and thanks to Leading Age again for allowing us to talk to you about another really important topic. Jen and I spoke a couple weeks ago to you about an overview of the revised guidance of surveyors. Today we thought we'd take a deeper dive into a kind of a constant problem for all of us, which is drug diversion. So I'll start, and then we'll turn it over to Jen here shortly. Just some statistics. It's been noted that about 10 to 20% of practicing nurses have substance abuse issues, which is pretty significant. The ANA also notes that about 6 to 8% of nurses are practicing while impaired, which is concerning. Substance abuse is the number one reason reported by boards of nursing for disciplinary action, and it's an issue from a survey standpoint. So again, we're going to talk to you about these revised guidance to surveyors, which will become effective this coming November. Drug diversion is noted in many parts of the guidance. For example, in the definition section under misappropriation of property, there's now a specific call out that diversion of meds, both controlled and non-controlled meds, would be considered misappropriation of a resident's property. And I think it's important for us to remember that while we often associate drug diversion with controlled drugs, we've seen on many occasions that staff sometimes divert drugs for family use or to sell on the street that are not necessarily controlled but are perhaps expensive and are used for other family members' illnesses. So, again, when you think about drug diversion, don't just focus on controlled drugs. It's all drugs, in fact. There's an investigative protocol listed out in the guidance of surveyors about looking at misappropriation when it comes to drugs in general. They call out a couple things for the surveyors to be sensitive to, which makes sense. So a typical response is to pain meds that were previously working for a resident. So in a resident that is generally well-controlled on the meds they're on, that starts to change. It may be physiological, that's for sure, but it may also be another sign of drug diversion. The investigative protocol asks surveyors to look at policies as you would expect, and they're looking for such things as safeguards, limiting access, monitoring of drugs, administration of drugs, how well you're documenting drugs. Reconciliation, of course, is the cornerstone with controlled meds. You know, the goal of reconciliation is not to prevent every drug diversion. It can't be. Its goal is really to early detect diversion and limit the extent of the law. So that's why med reconciliation is often an after-the-fact issue. It finds drugs after they've already been diverted. There's also a section discussing pharmacy policies about destruction in general. And, of course, there's a call out to surveyors to make sure that facilities are documenting residents' responses to medication. And again, this is not just for controlled drugs, but rather all drugs. So residents that are receiving blood pressure meds should have some documentation of how well their blood pressure is controlled along those lines. It also talks about expected referrals that surveyors find and validate drug diversion. So while the surveyors themselves would probably not be making these referrals, state agencies are expected, depending on the situation, to refer to such agencies as the DEA, local law enforcement, and state boards of nursing, pharmacy administration, and physicians. Again, when you talk about referrals, remember you all will be dealing with a relatively new regulation that talks about reporting reasonable suspicion of a crime. And certainly drug diversion would, under most circumstances, meet that definition. So that's a whole other topic, but reporting reasonable suspicion of a crime and drug diversion are connected. There's an actual section that talks about what happens when meds are unavailable in a facility and staff borrows meds from one resident to another. Excuse me, CMS has previously put out memos that says that's not appropriate. However, in this guidance, that should not be considered drug diversion. It's deficient, but not specific to drug diversion. There's a section that talks about emergency drug supply to include controls having periodic monitoring and reconciliation of your emergency drug supply. Interestingly, there's a comment from CMS that talks about how frequently you should reconcile controlled drugs. Now, many of the states you practice in have specific requirements, but CMS points out that the frequency of drug reconciliation should be driven by what it calls the experience of the facility. So if you have reason to believe drug diversion is happening or you have recent history of it happening, they say in the guidance that the frequency of reconciliation should increase just based on that. There's a portion that talks about reviewing data from injectable scheduled drugs to look at discrepancies related to that, unusual access patterns because injectable controls are sometimes frequently abused and diverted. And also it talks about infection control issues with injectable scheduled drugs. This dates back to, it's been many years now, but outbreaks of both hepatitis and HIV in healthcare facilities where multi-dose vials were used for numerous patients. So this next section is really kind of a landmark for us. There's been lots of attention paid to how does one count liquid-controlled medications, most notably morphine. So the morphine that is often delivered to your facilities is highly concentrated and often comes in opaque bottles that's hard to see the meniscus. There's not good graduation on the outside to help you measure it. And interestingly enough, many of those bottles are either overfilled or underfilled based on what the label says. I was, as a nurse, surprised to see this, that sometimes manufacturers can put a label that says this bottle contains 30 mLs when in fact it contains 32 mLs. That's leeway granted by, I think, the FDA. In any case, there's a large section in the new guidance from CMS that looks at this issue, and I'll actually read what it says. Absolute tracking of volume and use of liquid-controlled meds may not be possible. So that is something we at Remedy have been dealing with in many of our facilities. We've had facilities cited for poorly monitoring liquid-controlled drugs when, in fact, it wasn't even possible. So there is a section in the guidance that speaks to this, noting the over-underfill, the opaque bottles, the lack of graduated measurements. The guidance says this. The general standard of practice is to start the volume from what's on the label, record each dose that administered, subtract the previous from the previous volume, and then note the remaining volume. So there is guidance that talks about how to handle this. And there is also information that talks about potential drug diversion of these liquids, looking at obvious discrepancies between the documentation you have and what appears to be left in the bottle. They say to check for change in viscosity and color of the liquid, and you know we've certainly seen that in practice. You see an unusual amount or frequency of spills with liquid-controlled drugs that may be a sign of diversion. And again, it gets back to statements from residents where previously these liquid meds were controlling their symptoms and now are not. That's something to look at. Lastly, before I turn it over to Jen, I just want to comment on there's information in the guidance regarding disposal of all meds, including controlled meds, and really the purpose is to prevent diversion and accidental exposure. And there's a specific call out for fentanyl. So both the FDA and the manufacturer have recommended that fentanyl patches be folded and flushed, which sometimes doesn't feel right to both facilities and surveyors, but that is the current recommendation from both the FDA and the manufacturer on this, you know, highly addictive drug that is sought by a lot of addicts. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Jen to talk about some more specifics regarding drug diversion. Jen?
Great. Thanks, Bill. Good morning, everyone. What I want to talk about briefly today are two core activities. One are the workplace controls that you have in place in your facility around controlled substances and drug disposition. And then the second is creating your own investigative protocol when a drug diversion is suspected. So for the first one, as far as workplace controls, your pharmacy and the facility together likely have many processes in place to track controlled substances from the moment that they come into your door until they are either administered or destroyed due to non-use. So having those workplace controls in place is very important. There's been some statistics showing that nurses who administer drugs daily and perceive poor to non-existent workplace controls have twice the risk of drug misuse and diversion. So making sure that everyone is aware of the controls that are in place and that they are following them is an important piece of diversion prevention. So some examples of strong workplace controls include making sure you do have track of controlled substances when they are coming into your building, that someone is signing for them and that signature is legible, and that they put those drugs away immediately and appropriately. Shift counts, shift to shift, to have ongoing accountability. I have seen and I have witnessed many times nurses just pencil whipping the shift to shift count or not doing it. So again, as a nursing manager or a director of nursing, I encourage you to go check on those shift-to-shift counts to ensure that they are being done and that they are being done accurately and in the proper way, because that is a very easy way to catch errors quickly, is to make sure that you have that process going well. Making sure that medications that are discontinued are removed timely, and when they are removed to a safe and secure place. I have seen the classic file cabinet full of controlled substances awaiting destruction, where controlled substances are piling up and no one's really sure what's in that magical drawer. So then again, that's a right place for potential diversion to happen. And in fact, we have seen quite a few cases where diversion has happened once meds are taken out of the med cart and their disposition is questionable. Making sure that you do have a destruction process that is tight and that is witnessed by more than one individual. And making sure your documentation goes along with all of these things. So, again, likely these workplace controls are in place, but the question is who is looking at them, who is auditing them. Certainly your consultant pharmacist is in there helping, but that's only once a month. Think about, as nursing management and nursing leadership, other ways you can go and check and make sure that the nursing staff and medication administration staff are doing what they need to do to ensure controlled substance accountability throughout the process. And then with the minute or two that I have left, I am wanting to encourage you as a facility to have an investigation protocol when diversion is suspected or when tablets or liquids come up missing. Because invariably, I will get a panicked call. I think something's missing. What do I need to do? Who do I need to notify? And I think it's helpful to go through and sit down with your team at the facility and figure out exactly what you need to do and who you do need to notify. Again, the pharmacy, we would like you to notify us, in particular if it's from the interim box or emergency kit, because that is technically still property of the pharmacy and there are certain things the pharmacy will need to do. And then, as Bill discussed, if it is patient property because it's an already dispensed prescription, there are likely other agencies, including law enforcement, that you will need to call if there is drug diversion or missing medications there. So I'm not going to go through all the different pieces of an investigation, but we do have, as a pharmacy, some suggestions on a way that you can investigate a controlled substance diversion. And so I'll make sure that Leading Age has this resource. It's a one-pager checklist that we can provide to you, and you can use it as a springboard to develop your own investigation plan and policies and procedures, because quite frankly, diversion is going to happen. No matter how good your facility is and how good your nurses are, it eventually will happen to you, and you just need to be prepared so you can manage it quickly and specifically. So, Deborah, I think that is it for me today. I believe we're at our 10:15 mark.
Great. Well, thank you very much, Bill and Jennifer. I'm going to go ahead and turn off the recording, and then there'll be time for some questions. So bear with me a moment while I turn the recording off and unmute the lines.